Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
And away we go, episode 442 of the Al Galdi Podcast. It is Monday, November 14th, 2022. It is a Commanders game day in the nation's capital. The 4-5 Commanders at the 8-0 and NFL-leading Philadelphia Eagles on Monday Night Football at 8:15. What, oh what, is in store for us as Commanders fans on Monday night? Is our team going to get worked? Is our team going to get run over? Is our team going to get crushed by the mighty Eagles? Are we going to see a repeat of the infamous Monday Night Massacre of November 2010? Or are we maybe, possibly, gonna see the Commanders pull off one of the more improbable wins in the NFL this season? Hello and welcome to this Commanders pregame show, Monday installment of the Al Galdi Podcast. It is rare that we are together with an episode of the pod for the day of a Commanders game, but such is the case for a Monday night Commanders game. Are we in store for a barn burner on Monday night? Hey, what if Commanders Eagles on Monday night is like Vikings Bills on Sunday afternoon? Did you see that game? The Minnesota Vikings, a 33-30 overtime win at the Buffalo Bills. The Vikings overcame a 17-point third-quarter deficit. The emotional swings in that game, too many to count. But understand this, off all of the NFL games on Sunday, the Commanders, as we speak on this Monday, prior to their game at the Eagles on Monday night, are alone in 8th in the NFC. Yes, the Commanders are all by their lonesome in 8th place in the NFC. The Commanders are the lone 4-5 team in the NFC. They are one game behind the San Francisco 49ers for the NFC's third and final wild card spot. The Commanders are in playoff contention, whether you want them to be or not. Coming up on the show, in-depth preview of Commanders-Eagles. Next segment, I'll talk Commanders offense versus the Eagles defense, including some very good news for the Commanders offense and comments from offensive coordinator Scott Turner. After that, I'll talk Commanders defense versus the Eagles offense. Is the Commanders defense, which of course has been playing quite well, up to the task of doing a good job against the Eagles offense, an offense that is among the best offenses in the NFL? You'll also hear key comments from defensive coordinator Jack Del Rio. By the way, it does not sound like edge defender Chase Young will be making his season debut on Monday night. That certainly was a sense that you got from head coach Ron Rivera's post-practice press conference on Saturday. For the record, the Commanders have until 4 p.m. on Monday to activate Chase off the reserve physically unable to perform list for the game on Monday night. Monday, by the way, is the one-year anniversary of Chase suffering his torn right ACL. He suffered the injury on November 14th. 2021. Also on the show, I have my rhyming keys for a Commanders win at the Eagles. I'll give you a prediction for the game as well. I will be talking Wizards. The Wiz, they are flying, man. Four consecutive wins, including two over the weekend. Saturday evening, a 121-112 win over the Utah Jazz at Capital One Arena. Sunday evening, a 102-92 win over the Memphis Grizzlies at Capital One Arena. The Wizards now are 4-1 during this stretch without Bradley Beal. I will talk Capitals. Two games for the Caps over the weekend, each game against the Tampa Bay Lightning, and two very different outcomes for our Caps. Friday night, a 5-1 win over the Lightning at Capital One Arena, but Sunday night, a 6-3 loss at the Lightning. Things got nasty between the two teams. Caps goaltender Darcy Kuemper had a crazy weekend. A lot to discuss. So give you my thoughts on what was a not-so-good week 11 of the college football season for the teams of the Mid-Atlantic region. Maryland, Virginia Tech, and Virginia all got embarrassed on Saturday, and Navy and Liberty each lost by 3 on Saturday. And I'll talk some college basketball. Georgetown, Virginia, and Virginia Tech all won in routs over the weekend. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, thealgaldipodcast@yahoo.com. Tweet from Stephen Mulhern on Commanders Eagles on Monday night. Right, Stephen, Thursday was my birthday. I'm going to the game Monday night. It would be great if we could win. Best gift ever. Can't wait until Danny Boy is gone. Hashtag Happy Thanksgiving. Well, thank you for that tweet, Stephen. A belated happy birthday to you, and enjoy the game. And yes, happy Thanksgiving. Email from Thelonious Funk on Commanders head coach Ron Rivera's offensive and defensive coordinators. Writes Thelonious, I still don't believe in this coaching staff. How can Don Ron still believe in the aptitudes of Scott Turner and JDR? Granted, the defense is playing better. However, it still doesn't force turnovers, which means that the defense is lacking in playmakers, or that the defense is vanilla, or that the defense is just solid enough to stop pedestrian offenses, but isn't game-changing and isn't ready for prime-time offenses. Scott Turner is awful. It has taken 3 years for him to really involve Antonio Gibson in the passing game. Gibson finally seems to be running the routes that J.D. McKissic was running the last 2 years. WTF took so long? A healthy Swiss Army knife, Curtis Samuel, is rarely used to create mismatches, and Terry McLaurin is an afterthought until we get behind by double digits. Ron fires Sam Mills III, and magically, the defensive line seemed to improve overnight. Scott Turner should be on the hot seat, quarterback or not. With all of the weapons that the team has on the field, there should be some way to make this offense look more like an NFL offense. It is depressing to watch. Thank you for the email, Thelonious Funk. My man Thelonious is spitting fire in anticipation of Monday night. Look, I think that Jack Del Rio is doing a really good job with the defense. The lack of turnovers, yes, is a nit to pick, but, you know, turnovers can be flukish and random. When it comes to judging a defense, I think that you have to look at a lot of different things, and most of what you look at with the Commanders' defense is good. The two things that stand out as not being so good, one is that the defense hasn't created many turnovers, okay? That is a legitimate gripe. And the other thing is that the defense has given up too many big plays. So those two items are legitimate complaints with the defense, and no doubt, especially that second item, the giving up of too many big plays, could come back to haunt the Commanders at the Eagles on Monday night, because the Eagles' offense is, shall we say, explosive. As for Scott Turner, I read and responded to a number of Scott Turner emails on last Thursday's show, episode 440, and yeah, he needs to be better, okay? At some point, his Washington offense needs to produce. This is year three for him as the team's offensive coordinator. This is a third consecutive season with him as offensive coordinator in which the offense isn't good. And yes, there are excuses, but there always are excuses. At some point, you got to produce. And the Commanders' offense this season isn't producing. Well, there's never an excuse for a real estate agent to do a bad job for you, and a real estate agent with whom you should connect if you're looking to buy a home in the Washington, D.C. area is Kellen Hunt. You know, now's actually a good time to buy a home. Yes, Mortgage rates have gone up, but that has led to an increase in housing inventory, and that increase is driving down prices. You right now can get really good homes in the Washington, D.C. area at bargain prices. And remember, you can always refinance once the mortgage rates come back down, and they will come back down. And so if you or someone who you know is interested in buying a home in the D.C. area, contact real estate agent Kellen Hunt. Visit closeitwithkel.com. That's closeitwithkel, K-E-L-L.com. Book a call with Kellen Hunt to discuss your real estate needs and make sure that you tell Kel that Al Galdi sent you. Kellen Hunt has his finger on the pulse of developments all around the D.C. area. He is a DMV native. He lives and breathes the culture. He has a wealth of knowledge when it comes to local neighborhoods and economical development and schools and market conditions and all that makes the Washington, D.C. area unique. And Kellen Hunt closes deals. He wins. He is here for you to listen to what you want and then get you what you want. No matter your age, family situation, or financial situation, Kellen Hunt can help you. He is a real estate agent for real people, and Kellen Hunt is willing to put a portion of his commission back in your pocket. Who doesn't want some extra money right now, given inflation? Kellen Hunt knows what buyers like you are facing, and he wants to help. So visit closeitwithkel.com. That's closeitwithkel, K-E-L-L.com. Book a call with Kellen Hunt to discuss your real estate needs and make sure that you tell Kel that Al Galdi sent you. Visit closeitwithkel.com. See what Kellen Hunt can do for you by booking an introductory call with Kellen Hunt at closeitwithkel.com. If you are trying to buy a home in the Washington, D.C. area, you will do well by going with Kel. Visit closeitwithkel.com and tell Kel that Al Galdi sent you. Well, we hopefully on Tuesday's show, episode 443, will be discussing the very good news of the Commanders having won at the Philadelphia Eagles on Monday Night Football, but I can at least discuss with you some good Commanders news right now. Receiver Jahan Dotson finally will be back on Monday night. We on Saturday got the final injury report for the game. Jahan doesn't even have an official status for the game, meaning that he will be active. He had been inactive for each of the Commanders' last five games due to a hamstring injury. Remember, he aggravated the injury in practice on October 20th. Now, the Commanders, during Jahan's absence, went 3-2, but their top 2 point totals for the 2022 regular season remain the point totals of the team's first two games, the 28-22 win over the Jacksonville Jaguars at FedEx Field in Week 1 and the 36-27 loss at the Detroit Lions in Week 2. Jahan, even with having played in just four of the Commanders' nine games in the 2022 regular season, is number one on the team in receiving touchdowns with four. Think about that. He has missed five of the team's nine games and yet is number one on the team in receiving touchdowns with four. Running back J.D. McKissic is out for Monday night, so he's going to miss a second consecutive game due to this neck issue that appears as if it could be rather serious. Remember, JD in the 2021 regular season played in just 11 of Washington's 17 games. He missed the team's final six games due to a concussion and a neck injury. He in that 17-15 win over the Seattle Seahawks at FedEx Field on, yes, Monday Night Football, in Week 12 of last season, got injured on a fourth quarter reception. He lay on the field for multiple minutes, was stretchered off the field, and he ended up not playing again the rest of the season. And then two Commanders interior offensive linemen are questionable for Monday night. Left guard Andrew Norwell is questionable due to a groin ailment, and center Tyler Larson is questionable due to a back issue. The Commander starting center, if Larson can't play, would be Nick Martin. He of the many errant snaps. Martin was the Commander starting center for the 21-17 loss to the Tennessee Titans at FedEx Field in Week 5. He in that game was guilty of three bad shotgun snaps that resulted in fumbles being charged to quarterback Carson Wentz. How is the Commanders offense going to do against the Eagles defense. The Commanders offensive line was atrocious in that first game between the two teams this season, the 24-8 loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field in week three. The Commanders in that game allowed 9 sacks. Yes, the Eagles finished the game with 9 sacks, also finished the game with 17 quarterback hits. The Eagles' top two interior defensive linemen, Fletcher Cox and Javon Hargrave, are very good. This was Commanders offensive coordinator Scott Turner during a post-practice press conference on Friday afternoon.
I mean, that hit them, but then the guys on the outside are pretty good as well. You know, that front is very good. They're playing with a lot of confidence. They move guys around. They try to create one-on-one matchups. So we got to do a good job of, you know, making sure, again, we're in the right blocking schemes against them, and that we, you know, that we block them, you know, that we play physical and we come out of the gates with that mentality.
And the guys on the outside for the Eagles defensive line are edge defenders Brandon Graham and Josh Sweat. What kind of a game is Commanders quarterback Taylor Heinicke going to have at the Eagles on Monday night? You know, one of Taylor's more interesting games last season was a game against the Eagles, the 2016 loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field this past January 2nd. Taylor began the game on fire. He began the game 11 of 11 for 137 yards. He in the first half went 14 of 17 for 170 yards. But he in the second half went 13 of 19 for just 77 yards. And he threw a game-sealing and really season-sealing interception. Washington's eighth offensive drive of the game began with Washington trailing 2016 with 2:21 left in the fourth quarter. The 11th snap of the drive, first and 10 for Washington at the Eagles 20 with 30 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Taylor overthrew tight end John Bates, who did fall down, although he may not have made the catch anyway, on a deep shotgun pass, and the ball was intercepted in the end zone by safety Rodney McLeod, who's a local, went to DeMatha Catholic High School in Hyattsville, Maryland, and then went to the University of Virginia. This loss for Washington officially eliminated it from playoff contention. Well, something that would figure to be a must in order for the Commanders to have any chance of winning this game at the Eagles on Monday night is the Commanders being better on third downs. The Commanders are a putrid 5 of 22 on third downs over the team's last two games. The Commanders through week 9 were number 26 in the NFL in third down efficiency for the 2022 regular season. Scott Turner on Friday afternoon on how the Commanders can fix their third down problem.
You know, I got to make sure that I'm making the right calls where, you know, we're protecting the quarterback. The ball's coming out, you know, best opportunity to get number one open. And then, you know, we got to make plays when they're there too, you know, so it goes hand in hand.
Yes, it does. The Commanders offense versus the Eagles defense really is a statistical mismatch. Through week 9, we have the following rankings per Football Outsiders DVOA metric for the 2022 regular season. Commanders number 28 in the NFL in total offense, Eagles number 3 in the NFL in total defense. Now, two things to keep in mind about the Eagles defense. First of all, it is going to be without two corners on Monday night. Corners Avante Maddox and Josh Job are out for Monday night. Now, Job has yet to play on a single defensive snap in the 2022 regular season, but Maddox has played a lot for the Eagles. He's been their primary nickel corner, and going back to Jahan Dotson being back on Monday night, we know that Jahan is quite capable out of the slot. This might be a nice return game for Jahan, given the absence of Avante Maddox. Of course, we also have seen a good bit of receiver Curtis Samuel out of the slot this season. Either way, while the Eagles do have two outside corners in Darius Slay and James Bradbury, who are having really good seasons, the Eagles are going to be without their top nickel corner in Avante Maddox. The second thing to keep in mind with the Eagles defense is this: it has had issues against the run. The Eagles through week 9 per DVOA for the 2022 regular season were number 2 in the NFL in pass defense, but were just number 27 in the NFL in run defense. The Eagles last game was a 29-17 win at the Houston Texans on Thursday Night Football on November 3rd. Texans running back Damian Pierce, a rookie. The Texans took him in the fourth round of the 2022 NFL draft out of Florida. He had 27 carries for 139 yards. The Eagles had a 26-17 win over the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday Night Football on October 16th. Cowboys running backs Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard combined for 24 carries for 125 yards and a touchdown. The Eagles can be run on. Might we on Monday night see Commanders running backs Brian Robinson Jr. and Antonio Gibson feast? The Commanders' rushing offense this season, overall, not good. Commanders, through week 9, were number 27 in the NFL in rushing offense per DVOA for the 2022 regular season. Maybe, possibly, the ground game gets going on Monday night. Here was Scott Turner on Friday afternoon on what are you seeing from Brian Robinson Jr. over his 5 NFL regular season games, during which he over 67 carries, his average just 3.27 yards per carry.
I think he's doing well. I think, you know, he can continue to be more decisive. I think sometimes, you know, maybe he sees a little bit too much, and he's a big guy, and then when that takes away his speed, it makes it a little bit easier to tackle. I think just the more he plays, the more he's going to get comfortable, and he'll continue to play faster and faster, and that, you know, his speed but also his physicality will even show up more and more.
Yeah, would love to see Brian Robinson Jr. have a big game on Monday night. If you would like to advertise on the Al Galdi podcast and grow your business or practice by reaching thousands of people every episode at a very affordable price, hit us up. The email address is thealgaldipodcast@yahoo.com. Well, here's all that you need to know about the Philadelphia Eagles offense. The team in the 2022 regular season has played just 8 games as compared to the Commanders' 9 games, and yet the Eagles have scored 225 points. To the Commanders, 159. The Eagles, in one fewer game than the Commanders have played, have scored 66 more points than the Commanders have scored. Big test for the Commanders' defense in this game at the Eagles on Monday Night Football at 8:15, especially considering that linebacker Cole Holcomb is out again. He on Saturday was declared out for the game, so he'll miss a third consecutive game due to a foot injury. Also out for the Commanders is another linebacker, David Mayo. He'll miss a second consecutive game due to a hamstring ailment. The Eagles' offense this season has been quite the force. Quarterback Jalen Hurts might be the single most improved player in the NFL this season. He, through week 9, was number 4 among all qualified quarterbacks in the NFL in passing DVOA per Football Outsiders for the 2022 regular season. The Eagles, through week 9, per that Football Outsiders DVOA metric for this 2022 regular season, number 4 in the NFL in total offense, number 3 in the NFL in passing offense, number 5 in the NFL in rushing offense. But the Commanders, through week 9, per DVOA for the 2022 regular season, number 2 in the NFL in run defense. My biggest concern with the Commanders' defense on Monday night is the giving up of the big play. That was a major problem in the first game between these two teams, the 24-8 loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field in Week 3. But what also happened in that game was that the Commanders shut down the Eagles' rushing offense. The Commanders' run defense this season has been really good. Here was defensive coordinator Jack Del Rio during a post-practice press conference on Friday afternoon on facing the Eagles' rushing offense.
It's a big task. They've got a great big offensive line. I think they're very well coached. They've got excellent backs, and then the quarterback's a runner as well. So it's a tough ground game to slow down. So we dig into the prep of what the things we've got to be able to get done and work at it and understand it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, Eagles running back Miles Sanders is having a big season. He, in this 2022 regular season, 131 carries for 656 yards and 6 touchdowns. He's averaging 5.01 yards per carry. Eagles have 2 very good receivers in A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, have a very capable tight end in Dallas Goedert, and the Eagles do not commit turnovers. Now, turnovers can come and go, and maybe, hopefully, a whole lot come for the Eagles on Monday night, but the Eagles have committed just 3 turnovers in the 2022 regular season. 3! And the Commanders have generated just 7 takeaways in the 2022 regular season, and 2 of the takeaways came via special teams. The Commanders' defense has generated just 5 takeaways in the 2022 regular season. The Eagles' turnover ratio is an NFL best plus 15. The Commanders' turnover ratio is minus 4. Jack Del Rio on Friday afternoon on the importance of turnovers on Monday night.
They're always, it's the most important stat in football. And, you know, there's no secret that they're on top of the league right now in that category, and that directly leads to them being undefeated at this time. So, winning the turnover battle will be huge for us and a big challenge. They do a good job taking it away, and they're not very careless with it. So, so it's a big challenge.
Yes, it is. You know what's funny, though? The turnaround for the Commanders' defense this season actually started with that game against the Eagles at FedEx Field in Week 3. As good as the Eagles are offensively, the turnaround for the Commanders' defense began with that first game against the Eagles. The Commanders' defense, beginning with that game, has been quite good. More from Jack Del Rio on Friday afternoon.
I think our guys have been working hard. I think all year I've been pleased with like the effort, the energy, the commitment, the way we're attacking things. You know, you're going to improve when you work at it like that. And you know, we're close to the halfway point, I guess. You know, I like some things. There's some things that we need to do better, and we're working at it. But I absolutely love the commitment, the effort, the energy the guys put forth in terms of trying to understand the game plan, which changes, you know, from time to time and for different opponents. But I think the players and coaches have done a great job of really working hard and not worrying about things we don't control and just kind of focusing in on the preparation to get ready to compete.
Up next, my rhyming keys for a Commanders win at the Eagles on Monday night. As yes, I will rhyme the path to victory.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, the phrase Monday Night Football sends shivers down the spines of most Commanders fans. And yes, the 4-5 Commanders are at the 8-0 and NFL leading Philadelphia Eagles for Monday Night Football at 8:15. But the truth is that Washington's Monday Night struggles have been much more of a FedEx Field thing than anything else. Washington is just 3-17 all time in regular season games at FedEx Field on Monday Night Football. Although, one of the three wins did come last season. The 17-15 win over the Seattle Seahawks at FedEx Field on Monday Night Football on November 29th, 2021. Washington in recent seasons actually hasn't played that many road games on Monday Night Football. This game at the Eagles on Monday night is Washington's first regular season road game on Monday Night Football since 2018, although the Redskins in that season got ripped in two Monday Night road games. October 8th, 2018, a 43-19 loss at the New Orleans Saints, and December 3rd, 2018, a 28-13 loss at, yes, the Philadelphia Eagles. Washington has lost 9 of its last 11 games against the Eagles. How does it be that Washington gets back to beating the Eagles with a win on Monday night? My friends, it is that time. The time to rhyme. It is time for Rhyming Keys. My keys to a Commander's victory in rhyming fashion. Oh, these rhymes, they are not meant to be good. They are only meant to make a few points. And in fact, I have a saying for this segment: the worse the rhyme, the better the time. And so here we go. Hardcore analysis combined with scheduled fun, rhyming keys for a Commanders win at the Eagles. How do the Commanders win this game and shock the world? We now rhyme the ways. Rhyming key number one. This is for Commanders offensive coordinator Scott Turner, a popular topic on the Al Galdi podcast in recent days. And this rhyming key number one is for the Commanders offensive line. Capably handle the threat of Cox, Hargrave, Graham, and Sweat. Plenty of things went wrong for the Commanders in their 24-8 loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field in Week 3, but nothing was worse for the Commanders than their pass protection. The Commanders allowed the Eagles to finish the game with 9 sacks and 17 quarterback hits, and according to Pro Football Focus and True Media, 7 of the Eagles' 9 sacks came without blitzing. The Commanders' offensive line got worked by Eagles interior defensive lineman Fletcher Cox and Javon Hargrave and edge defenders Brandon Graham and Josh Sweat. The Eagles have a really good defensive line. It, in Week 3, ravaged the Commanders. Graham finished with 2.5 sacks and 5 quarterback hits. Sweat finished with 1.5 sacks and 3 quarterback hits. Now, of course, the former Eagle, Carson Wentz, was the Commanders' starting quarterback for this game. He did not play well. His offensive line did not play well, but Scott Turner also did not call a good game. He inexplicably did not make greater usage of quick game or of Carson operating out of moving pockets, you know, bootlegs, sprint outs, etc. The Commanders have no chance in this game on Monday night if their pass protection is as bad as it was in that loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field in Week 3. Now, the Commanders' current starting quarterback, Taylor Heinicke, obviously is more mobile than Carson Wentz is, and so you would think that Taylor on Monday night will not be getting sacked 9 times, but it would be nice if he wasn't constantly pressured. It would be nice if he wasn't constantly running for his life, and it would be nice if Scott Turner took greater advantage of Taylor's greatest weapon, his mobility. I've been begging for that on this podcast. Perhaps we will see that on Monday night. And so rhyming key number one, this for Scott Turner and the Commanders offensive line: capably handle the threat of Cox, Hargrave, Graham, and Sweat. Rhyming key for Commanders Eagles number two, this is for Taylor Heinicke and Commanders receivers: do not let Bradberry and Slay have their way. Eagles corners Darius Slay and James Bradberry, they are having excellent seasons. Through Week 9, Slay, for Pro Football Focus, was number one among all qualified corners in the NFL in the 2022 regular season in lowest passer rating allowed, 36.2. And Bradberry was number three at 38.4. Slay and Bradberry, to me, have been the best cornerback duo in the NFL this season. This game on Monday night is a big spot for Taylor Heinicke. It may be his last chance to make his case to being the Commanders' starting quarterback this season. Of course, a good bit of that depends on if Carson Wentz is ready to come off the reserve injured list after this game, which will mark the fourth and final game that Carson has to miss in being on the reserve injured list. He's been on that since October 22nd due to the fractured right ring finger that he suffered in the win at the Chicago Bears on Thursday Night Football in week 6. It is terrific news that Jahan Dotson on Monday night will be returning from a 5-game absence caused by a hamstring injury, that Commanders receiver trio of Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, and Jahan Dotson will be whole for the first time in a long time, for the first time in 6 games. Those guys need to be on their games, need to generate separation, and Taylor Heinicke needs to be on his game. You know, smart decisions, accurate throws. He cannot be doing his Tay-Tay thing of not stepping into throws, which is part of the problem on the big fourth quarter interception to safety Harrison Smith in the Commanders' last game, the 2017 loss to the Minnesota Vikings at FedEx Field in week 9. The Commanders on Monday night need to score some points. You can't plan on the Commanders' usual thing of scoring 17 points being enough to win this game. If it turns out that 17 points are enough to win this game, great. But you can't just count on that, okay? This Eagles defense is a major challenge, though. We talked about that earlier in the show. And so rhyming key number 2, this for Taylor Heinicke and Commanders receivers: do not let Bradberry and Slay have their way. Rhyming key for Commanders Eagles, number 3. This is for the entire Commanders defense. Do as you did in week 3, with the exception of one thing: the big play you see. It's a funny thing, but as we talked about last segment, the turnaround for the Commanders defense this season started with that 24-8 loss to the Eagles at FedEx Field in week 3. The Commanders defensive line for this game was depleted big time due to injury. But safety Cameron Curl made his 2022 regular season debut of having been inactive for the Commanders' first 2 games of the 2022 regular season due to a right thumb injury. And the Commanders' defense ended up doing a lot of good things. The Commanders allowed Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts to complete just 22 of his 35 pass attempts. The Commanders totaled 7 pass defenses and 3 sacks. Corner Benjamin St. Juice had 3 pass defenses. The Commanders held the Eagles to just 5 of 15 on third downs. The Commanders stopped the run. They held the Eagles to just 72 yards on 30 carries. That works out to a mere 2.4 yards per carry. But the Commanders allowed too many big passing plays, too many explosives, as head coach Ron Rivera likes to say. The Commanders allowed the Eagles to have 5 passing plays, each of at least 31 yards. Jalen Hurts, over his 35 pass attempts, threw for 340 yards, 3 touchdowns, and no interceptions. Eagles receiver Devontae Smith finished with 8 receptions for 169 yards and a touchdown on 12 targets. The Commanders on Monday night have got to limit the big plays, have got to limit the explosives from an Eagles offense that is ultra potent. Jalen Hurts, through week 9, was number 2 among all qualified quarterbacks in the NFL in yards per pass attempt for the 2022 regular season, 8.54. And so rhyming key number 3, this for the entire Commanders defense: do as you did in week 3, with the exception of one thing, the big play you see. And one more, it is number 4. Rhyming key for Commanders Eagles number 4, this is for the entire Commanders team: pull off a win to remember, as you did 2 years ago in a similar circumstance in December. A Commanders win on Monday night would be perhaps Washington's most improbable win of the Ron Rivera era. What may well currently stand as the team's most improbable win of the Ron Rivera era is a game that happened in a similar circumstance. This game was played on a Monday evening, though not on a Monday night, and this game was a road game in the state of Pennsylvania against an unbeaten team. December 7th, 2020, the then Washington football team improved to 5-7 with a 23-17 win at the Pittsburgh Steelers, who had been 11-0 with an NFL best point differential of plus 129. Washington in that game overcame a 17-0 second quarter deficit. There is so much going on with the Commanders off the field right now, obviously. I do think that this off-the-field stuff gets overrated as serving as distractions for players, but the off-the-field stuff doesn't help. Wouldn't it be something, and wouldn't it be quite the statement regarding the culture that Ron Rivera is building in the team's football operations, if he galvanized his players to where they pulled off a shocking win on Monday night, especially off the recent death of Ron's mother, Dolores Rivera? Basically, nobody is expecting the Commanders to win this game. You know how the NFL works when basically nobody expects something to happen. That is precisely when you should expect that something to happen, like Washington's win at the Steelers 2 years ago. And so, rhyming key number four, this for the entire Commanders team, pull off a win to remember, as you did 2 years ago, in a similar circumstance, in December. All right, it is prediction time. The Commanders per win bet, as of very early Monday morning, were plus 11. I don't know if the Commanders are going to win this game, but I like them to keep the game close. I said, I don't know if the Commanders are going to win this game, but I like them to keep the game close.
It means you're close.
Yes, thank you, Bruce Allen. Close. And so I will take the Commanders plus the points. Final score, Eagles 24, Commanders 20. Well, as a lifelong Bullets/Wizards fan, I am happy to say that the Wizards are rolling.
The damn Washington Wizards!
Yes, Stephen A. Smith, that team, our team. The Wizards have won four consecutive games. The Wiz have gone from 4-6 to now 8-6. Two more wins over the weekend. Saturday evening, a 121-112 win over the Utah Jazz at Capital One Arena. Sunday evening, a 102-92 win over the Memphis Grizzlies at Capital One Arena. The Wizards on Saturday evening overcame a 9-point second quarter deficit and led for the entire second half. The Wizards on Sunday evening overcame a 9-point second quarter deficit and never trailed in the second half. And it's impossible to ignore that the Wizards are doing this without Bradley Beal. Beal over the weekend did not play due to return to competition conditioning of having been in the NBA's health and safety protocols. He now has missed five consecutive games, but the Wizards are 4-1 during that stretch. The Wiz also remain without maybe their best defensive player, Delon Wright. He has been out since suffering a grade 2 right hamstring strain in a 120-99 win over the Detroit Pistons at Capital One Arena on October 25th. Now, the Grizzlies on Sunday evening were without two very key players in Ja Morant and Desmond Bane due to injury, but still, major credit to our Wizards for the work that they're doing. The Wizards' three-point shooting, so much better lately. First of all, the Wizards in that win over the Jazz on Saturday evening had their best offensive game of the season. The Wizards scored a season-high tying 121 points. The Wizards went 16 of 36 on threes. The Wizards scored 52 points in the paint, going 26 of 42 in the paint. The Wizards went 17 of 20 on free throws. The Wizards finished with 27 assists versus just 9 turnovers. And the Wizards did all of this against a Jazz team that came into the game at 10-3 and had been one of the better defensive teams in the NBA. And then the Wizards in the win over the Grizzlies on Sunday evening had an odd offensive game in which the Wiz were better on threes than the Wiz were on twos or on free throws. The Wizards went 19 of 40 on threes, but the Wizards went just 17 of 46 on twos and went just 11 of 21 on free throws. But I think the big takeaway out of all of that is finally, we are seeing the Wizards take a lot of threes and make a good number of threes. The Wizards have joined the rest of the NBA in the year 2022. This was Wizards head coach Wes Unseld Jr. during his postgame press conference on Sunday night.
Just more of a mindset, and I think we're doing a better job of finding those paint threes, of being a little bit more disciplined with our spacing. The kick aheads in transition have been good, and our willingness to shoot it. I thought early in the year we were turning down too many, and those led to more turnovers, you know, some of the tough contested mid-range shots. We're trying to avoid some of that. So I think it's more of just a mindset, the pace that we're playing. All those things, I think, have combined to help, you know, with the three-point shooting.
And a key part of the improved three-point shooting has been Kristaps Porzingis. He had the win over the Jazz on Saturday evening, returned from a one-game absence caused by a left groin strain And he was a force. He, in just 32 minutes, 36 seconds as a starter, went 4 of 8 on threes, 8 of 12 on twos, and 3 of 5 on free throws, and finished with 31 points, 10 rebounds, 2 blocks, 2 assists versus 1 turnover, and a game-best plus-minus rating of plus 24. And then the zinger in the win over the Grizzlies on Sunday evening in 31-23 as a starter, 6 of 10 on threes. He did go just 1 of 5 on twos, but he also went 5 of 6 on free throws and finished with 25 points, 6 rebounds, including 3 offensive boards, 2 blocks, 2 steals, and 2 assists versus 2 turnovers. A very good defense from the Wizards on Sunday evening. Again, the Grizzlies were without Ja Morant and Desmond Bane, but the Wizards held the Grizzlies to just 92 points, just 9 of 28 on threes, just 29 of 68 on twos, and the Wizards defended, for the most part, without fouling. The Wizards held the Grizzlies to just 10 free throw attempts, and the Grizzlies went just 7 of 10 on free throws. Good game for Denny Avdia on Sunday evening, 33 minutes, 54 seconds as a starter, 4 of 7 on threes, did go just 4 of 9 on twos, and just 1 of 3 on free throws, but he finished with 21 points and 5 assists versus 3 turnovers. Another good game for this guy, Jordan Goodwin, on Sunday evening. 26-08 off the bench, 3 of 4 on threes. He did go 0 of 3 on twos, but he finished with 10 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 assists versus no turnovers. And Goodwin, for a third consecutive game, played more than Monte Morris did in the fourth quarter. Wes Unseld Jr. has been riding Jordan Goodwin more so than Wes has been riding Monte Morris in these recent fourth quarters. Now, Morris was good on Saturday evening. He in the win over the Jazz, 29-11 as a starter, did go just 1-3 on threes and just 1-6 on two, scored just 5 points, but he had 9 assists versus no turnovers and 7 rebounds. You know, it's not so much that Monte Morris has been like awful as it has been that Jordan Goodwin has been quite good. I mean, he's been like a revelation for the Wizards. Mixed weekend for Kyle Kuzma. He in the win over the Jazz on Saturday evening was questionable for the game due to illness. 33-10 as a starter, went just 1-7 on threes, committed 4 turnovers, but he also went 7-12 on twos and 6-7 on free throws, finished with 23 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists. And then Kuzma in the win over the Grizzlies on Sunday evening, 34-25 as a starter. He, for a second consecutive game, went just 1-7 on threes and committed 4 turnovers, but he went 3-6 on twos, finished with 9 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 assists. The Wizards are playing well. It is nice to see this. Next up for the Wiz, home to the Oklahoma City Thunder, Wednesday night at 7. Well, a crazy weekend for the Capitals. They played 2 games, each against the Tampa Bay Lightning, which has won the Eastern Conference Championship in each of the last 3 seasons and won back-to-back Stanley Cup titles in 2020 and 2021. And the results of these 2 games against the Lightning, rather different for the CAPS Caps. Friday night, the Caps ripped the Lightning 5-1 at Capital One Arena, but Sunday night, the Caps lost at the Lightning 6-3. The Caps now are 7-8-2. A lot to get to with these 2 games against the Lightning. First of all, the Caps head coach was out for both of these games. The Caps, who have been ravaged by injury this season, now have been without their head coach for the last 2 games. The Caps head coach Peter Laviolette not with the team for either game over the weekend due to being in the NHL's COVID protocol. And so Caps assistant coach Kevin McCarthy assumed the Caps head coaching duties. Additionally, the Caps remained without 7 key players due to injury. Defenseman Dmitry Orlov and 6 forwards Nicholas Backstrom, Tom Wilson, TJ Oshie, Connor Brown, Carl Hagelin, and Beck Malenstein. However, the Caps did get back defenseman John Carlson. He on Friday night returned from a 6-game absence caused by a lower body injury that he suffered in a 3-0 win at the Nashville Predators on October 29th. happen. Carlson on Friday night played for a team high 26 minutes, 12 seconds. He had a primary assist. He had a team high tying three hits, and he finished number three on the Caps in 5-on-5 shot attempt percentage for the game per natural stat trick at 68. The Caps with Carlson on the ice in 5-on-5 situations in the game had 17 shot attempts versus allowing 8 shot attempts. But Carlson on Sunday night had a team worst tying plus minus rating of -3. The Caps starting goaltender for both of these games against the Lightning was Darcy Kuemper. Two very different games for him. He on Friday night was good. He stopped 28 of the 29 shots on goal that he faced in a nice bounce back performance off what had happened in his previous outing, the 4-1 loss to the Pittsburgh Penguins at Capital One Arena last Wednesday night. Kuemper in that game stopped 24 of the 27 shots on goal that he faced, but it wasn't just that. He in that game per natural stat trick stopped just 6 of the 8 low danger shots on goal that he faced. Well, Kuemper on Sunday night was back to struggling. He stopped just 5 of the 9 shots on goal that he faced and got pulled in the first period in favor of Charlie Lindgren, who ended up being good. Lindgren stopped 24 of the 25 shots on goal that he faced. And Kuemper on Sunday night again had trouble with the low danger shot. He per natural stat trick stopped just 2 of the 5 low danger shots on goal that he faced. The Caps on Sunday night got demolished in the puck possession battle. The Caps per natural stat trick had just 33 5-on-5 shot attempts to the Lightning's 52, including just 4 5-on-5 high danger shot attempts to the Lightning's 10. The Caps totaled 22 shots on goal to the Lightning's 35. This was Kevin McCarthy during his post-game session with reporters on Sunday night, especially on a first period in which the Caps got outscored 4-0.
We came out and we weren't even close to being ready to play. I mean, it's pretty obvious there. I mean, it was like we're trying to catch a moving train out there. I mean, we were late to everything. They were first on pucks. They won every puck battle. They won every race for a puck. They did, you know, they did everything that that we talked about what we needed to do. I mean, you know, it was an all around, you know, just a terrible, terrible 20 minutes.
Yeah, you know, these two games for the Caps against the Lightning over the weekend, chippy affairs. The game on Friday night ultimately featured 21 total penalties, 12 two-minute minors, 6 five-minute fighting majors, a five-minute match penalty, and 2 10-minute misconduct penalties. Caps winger Nicholas Obey-Kubel, who the Caps claimed off waivers from the Toronto Maple Leafs on November 5th, played for just 4 minutes 28 seconds before receiving a 5-minute match penalty, 1:56 into the second period, for a headshot on Lightning defenseman Cal Foote in the neutral zone. Obey-Kubel smashed his right shoulder onto Foote's face. Yes, the face of Foote. The hit led to a fight involving Caps winger Garnett Hathaway, who received a 5-minute fighting major and a 10-minute misconduct penalty. And the NHL Department of Player Safety on Saturday morning announced that Hathaway had been fined $4,054.05, the maximum allowable under the collective bargaining agreement. Also, the NHL Department of Player Safety on Saturday night announced that Obey-Kubel had been suspended for 3 games without pay. Then, in the Caps 6-3 loss at the Lightning on Sunday night, more chippiness. Take, for example, Caps defenseman Matt Irwin. He had a game-high 10 hits, a team-best tying plus-minus rating of +2, and 2 5-minute fighting majors. Heck, winger Alex Ovechkin on Sunday night, he received a second period 4-minute high-sticking double minor. Ovi also had 5 hits, and he had a team-high 7 total shot attempts. Ovi on Friday night had a secondary assist, a game-high 12 total shot attempts, and finished number 6 on the Caps in 5-on-5 shot attempt percentage for the game per natural stat trick at 57.69. The Caps with Ovi on the ice in 5-on-5 situations in the game had 15 shot attempts versus allowing 11 shot attempts. So it was an active weekend for Alex Ovechkin. The Caps penalty kill on Friday night was great. The Caps went 3-of-3 on the penalty kill, including killing a 5-minute Lightning power play in the second period. But the Caps on Sunday night got walloped on special teams. The Caps went just 2-of-4 on the penalty kill, and the Caps went 0-of-6 on the power play. This off the Caps on Friday night having gone 0-6 on the power play. Yeah, all five of the Caps' goals in that 5-1 win over the Lightning on Friday night were even strength goals. You know, the Caps since going a spectacular 4-5 on the power play in the 5-4 win over the Edmonton Oilers at Capital One Arena last Monday night are 0-16 on the power play. One other thing about the Caps' weekend, winger Sonny Milano on Friday night. He was tremendous in the win over the Lightning. Two even strength goals, a secondary assist, a team-high 4 shots on goal, and a team-high tying plus-minus rating of +3. Milano scored an even strength breakaway goal 7:03 into the second period off coming out of the penalty box, which he had been in serving the 5-minute match penalty for winger Nicholas Obey-Kubel. Milano made multiple nice moves in putting the puck past the right pad of Lightning goaltender Andrei Vasilevskiy. Sonny Milano, I mean, another guy who was with the Caps due to all of the team's injuries. The Caps on October 16th signed Milano as an unrestricted free agent to a 1-year $750,000 contract. They then placed him on waivers for the purpose of loaning him to the team's AHL affiliate, the Hershey Bears, and the Caps on November 2nd recalled Milano from Hershey, and he came up big on Friday night. Next up for the Caps at the Florida Panthers, Tuesday night at 7. Well, we move now to college football. Week 11 ended up being a brutal week for the teams of the Mid-Atlantic region. Maryland, Virginia Tech, and Virginia all got stomped, and Navy and Liberty lost close games. We begin with Maryland, which fell to 6-4 overall and 3-4 in the Big Ten with a 30-0 loss at number 14 Penn State on Saturday. Yes, the Terrapins got blanked at Penn State on Saturday. The Terps, for a second consecutive game, got manhandled on the road in a bad weather game as it was a rainy day at Beaver Stadium in University Park, Pennsylvania. Terps offense, for a second straight game, was horrendous. So the Terps scored no points. The Terps generated just 134 total net yards of offense and averaged just 2.23 yards per play. 2.23 yards per play. That is a microscopic yards per play. The Terps went just 4-16 on third downs and 0-3 on fourth downs. The Terps lost the time of possession battle by 12 minutes, 10 seconds. Terps quarterback Talia Tungavailoa, for a second consecutive game, looked terrible. Now, a lot of this had to do with the Terps offensive line, which had Talia constantly under siege. He took 7 sacks, but Talia also struggled himself. He went just 11-22 for just 74 yards, no touchdowns, and no interceptions. He, in fact, got benched in the fourth quarter in favor of Billy Edwards Jr. The only bright spot for the Terps offense was running back Roman Hemby, having 13 carries for 68 yards. And just as the Terps offensive line got worked for a second consecutive game, so too did the Terps defensive line. The Terps finished with no sacks. The Terps allowed Penn State running backs Nicholas Singleton, Katron Allen, and Tyler Holdsworth to combine for 30 carries for 209 yards and 2 touchdowns. Singleton totaled 122 yards and 2 touchdowns over just 11 carries. He averaged 11.09 yards per carry. Very disappointing performance by Maryland, which has routinely gotten smashed by ranked Big Ten teams since joining the Big Ten. We thought that this season might be different given the Terps' respectable performance in the 34-27 loss at then number 4 Michigan on September 24th. But this loss at Penn State was brutal. Here was Terps head coach Mike Locksley during his post-game press conference on Saturday evening.
We did not play in any phase up to the standard that we have for ourselves. As I told our team, now ain't the time to panic, but it is time that we, starting with myself, take a deep look at everything we're doing on offense, on defense, on special teams, and find a way to get us back on the right track. I have no problem with the way we've prepared. I have a big problem with the way we've executed. And again, we got to take a hard look, and it starts with me inside. Now is not the time for us to panic. We still got 2 games left. We're still in a great situation, but it is time to really take a hard look inside to make sure that we're playing the right guys, we're doing the right things in all 3 phases, and get it fixed to get us back on the right track.
Yeah, well, getting back on the right track will not be easy. Next up for Maryland, home to number 2 Ohio State this Saturday afternoon at 3:30. Wild game for Navy on Saturday afternoon. The midshipmen fell to 3-7 overall with a 35-32 loss to number 20 Notre Dame at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore, Maryland. Now, the loss clinched Navy having a third consecutive losing season, but the mids in this game made quite the charge. They lost the first half 35-13. They then won the second half 19-0, including cutting their deficit to 3 at 35-32 with 1:21 left in the fourth quarter, but the mids' ensuing onside kickoff ended up not being successful. Navy for the game was a 17-point underdog per multiple shops. We again saw two quarterbacks for Navy, with Ty Lovatai having suffered a season-ending injury in Navy's 27-20 overtime win over Temple at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium in Annapolis, Maryland on October 29th. The mid-starting quarterback for a second consecutive game was Xavier Arline, though we for a second consecutive game also saw a good bit of Masai Maynard, as Arline for a second consecutive game dealt with some kind of an ailment. Arline in the fourth quarter of this game got hurt. Arline for the game, 12 carries, 59 yards, and a touchdown. He went 2-4 passing for 57 yards, a touchdown, and no interceptions. He took one sack. Maynard had 4 carries for 7 yards. He went 4-7 passing for 51 yards, a touchdown, and no interceptions, and took no sacks. A big game for Navy fullback Daba Fofana, 15 carries for 133 yards and a touchdown. He averaged 8.87 yards per carry. And then there was Navy's defense, which had two totally different halves. The discrepancy was incredible. The mids in the first half allowed Notre Dame to score 35 points, go 5-7 on third downs, and generate 333 total net yards of offense. But the mids in the second half held Notre Dame to no points, just 1-6 on third downs, and just 2 total net yards of offense. Yes, Navy went from allowing Notre Dame in the first half to have 333 total net yards of offense to allowing Notre Dame in the second half to have 2 total net yards of offense. Also, the mids in the second half totaled all 5 of their sacks. The mids in just the fourth quarter had 4 sacks and an interception, and Navy had more special teams problems, as the mids in the first quarter had a missed extra point attempt, and in the second quarter had a punt that was blocked. Like I said, wild game. This was Navy head coach Ken Niumatalolo during his post-game press conference on Saturday afternoon.
First of all, just proud of our players. I don't know if I've ever been more proud of a football team after a game, win or loss, as I was this game. I just thought our kids battled to the very end. Great testament to who they are, their character, their fortitude, their resolve, their resiliency. Great testament to their parents, raised fine young men. Great testament to the school that's going to battle to the end. I mean, that's a good football team. Coach Freeman's a good coach. And just proud of our guys, just proud of our guys. Obviously, we didn't make enough plays. And against a team like that, you can't make mistakes. And just a couple too many mistakes against them. But again, to our kids' credit, they came back and battled. Hats off to Notre Dame, but really, really proud of our football program and our team. I wish we had a chance to get the ball back one more time. You know, and just but just proud of our team and what they did.
Yeah, the midshipmen do fight. There's no doubting that. Next up for Navy at number 22, UCF, this Saturday morning at 11. So Navy on Saturday afternoon lost by 3. So too did Liberty. The Flames, they fell to 8-2 overall with a 36-33 upset loss at UConn. Liberty now is out of the Associated Press Top 25 poll of having been in that for each of the last 2 weeks. Liberty was among others receiving votes for the AP poll that came out on Sunday afternoon. Liberty for this game at UConn, it was a 13-point favorite in multiple shops, but the Flames at the end of the first quarter trailed 14-3. They then blew fourth quarter leads of 27-21 and 33-28. Not a good game for Liberty's defense against the UConn offense that had been woeful this season. The Huskies, through Week 10, were 127th out of 131 FBS teams in offensive efficiency per the SP Plus rankings of ESPN college football analyst Bill Connelly for this season. Liberty's third-string quarterback Jonathan Bennett, again, was the team starting quarterback, although the man who he replaced, Caden Salter, did play in the game off having been out due to a groin injury for which he underwent surgery. Bennett, 22 of 36 for 201 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. He took one sack. He had five official carries for 25 yards. Salter, 1 of 3 passing for 6 yards, no touchdowns, and no interceptions. He took one sack. He had two official carries for 0 yards. Now, Liberty was extremely depleted at running back for this game. Running back Day Day Hunter, he suffered a season-ending torn LCL in Liberty's previous game, the 21-19 win at Arkansas on November 5th. And the Flames also were without running back Shedro Lewis due to personal reasons. His father recently passed away. But Liberty did get a big game from running back TJ Green, 24 carries for 119 yards and a touchdown. And Liberty got a big game from receiver Demario Douglas, 7 receptions for 70 yards on 13 targets and 2 carries for 105 yards and a touchdown, which was an early fourth quarter, first and 10, 75-yard shotgun read option touchdown run. Next up for Liberty, home to Virginia Tech this Saturday at noon. And speaking of the Hokies, they fell to 2-8 overall and 1-6 in the ACC with a 24-7 loss at Duke on Saturday afternoon. Virginia Tech now has its first 7-game losing streak since 1951. Let me say that year again, 1951. The Hokies led early in the first quarter 7-0, but they then lost the rest of the game 24-0. Hokies quarterback and Marshall transfer Grant Wells, another bad game. He completed just 16 of his 28 pass attempts. He now has a completion percentage of just 58.3 for this season. He, over his 28 pass attempts, threw for just 177 yards. He now has a yards per pass attempt of just 6.48 for this season. And Wells had an early first quarter, 2nd-and-8, 53-yard shotgun play action touchdown pass to receiver Daywon Lofton on a great throw while under duress. But Wells' other 27 pass attempts went for just 124 yards. That works out to just 4.59 yards per pass attempt. Wells finished with the 1 touchdown pass versus 1 interception, so he now has just 9 touchdown passes versus 9 interceptions this season. And Wells quarterback to Hokies offense that went just 4-12 on third downs. Tech's running game was effective, but could only be used so much given the nature of the game. Running back Malachi Thomas did not play due to injury. Running backs Jalen Holston, Keyshawn King, Chance Black, and Bryce Duke combined for 18 carries for 93 yards. I mean, that works out to 5.17 yards per carry. Tech's defense played well enough to win, but could only do so much, and the defense was on the field a ton. Tech lost the time of possession battle by 17 minutes, 58 seconds. Tech allowed Duke to go 8-16 on third downs. Tech held Duke quarterback Riley Leonard to just 19 of 31 passing and generated an interception, but Tech also allowed Leonard to throw for 262 yards and 2 touchdowns, did not sack him a single time, and allowed him to have 9 carries for 48 yards and a touchdown. A rough first season for Brent Pry as Hokies head coach continues. Here he was during his postgame press conference on Saturday afternoon.
I expect us to play better. I do. I also have a pretty good idea where we're, you know, where we're at. And it's my job to encourage this team to be positive and to get us better. And that's what we're doing. There are good things. There'll be good things on this film that we can build on. But we certainly got some work to do. You know, we've got to build depth. We've got some good players. We don't have enough of them. And I think we have to look at what we're doing, you know, schematically, but it's what I said to the guys in the locker room. You know, we have to be better, just fundamentally ground zero stuff. And, you know, that goes back to me. I got to make sure we're good in those areas. That's who I am as a coach. That's what I believe in, is fundamentals and basics and sound. And we're not doing those things. Not good enough. So I think, you know, we got to recruit. We got to develop. We got to continue to improve our culture, continue to improve our practice habits, our knowledge of the game. Our knowledge of the game has to continue to grow. You know, there's certain things that we are coaching and teaching and doing that, you know, as we move forward, should be part of who we are, and you're not coaching those things anymore. Those are 100-level items that you know, after a year or two in the system and in the program, that guys understand, and you know, you can start kind of working on some other things.
Yeah, Virginia Tech this season is just a bad team, as is Virginia. I can't decide which team is worse right now, Virginia Tech or Virginia. Each team scored exactly 7 points in a blowout loss on Saturday afternoon. The Cavaliers fell to 3-7 overall and 1-6 in the ACC with a 37-7 loss to Pitt at Scott Stadium in Charlottesville, Virginia. And so it is now official. The Cavs will not be bowl eligible this season. The Cavs got destroyed. They lost the first quarter 28-0. Yeah, at the end of the first quarter, the score was Pitt 28, Virginia nothing. The Cavs deep in the third quarter trailed 31-0. And how about what happened with Cavs quarterback Brennan Armstrong? He had maybe the worst game of his career. Incredibly, inconceivably, each of Brennan Armstrong's first two pass attempts resulted in a first quarter pick six. I mean, you talk about a nightmare of a start to a game for a quarterback. The first two offensive plays of the game were Brennan Armstrong pick sixes. The Cavs trailed 14-0 with 14:44 left in the first quarter. Armstrong finished the game with one touchdown pass versus two pick sixes. So he threw for more touchdowns for Pitt than he did for UVA. Armstrong now has just 7 touchdown passes versus 12 interceptions this season. He completed just 17 of his 33 pass attempts. He now has a completion percentage of just 54.6 for this season. He over his 33 pass attempts threw for just 152 yards. He now has a yards per pass attempt of just 6.52 for this season. Armstrong took 8 sacks. He quarterbacked a UVA offense that went just 2 of 13 on third downs. Now, gotta mention this, UVA for a second consecutive game was without 3 key receivers and a key running back due to injury. Receivers Dontavian Wicks, Keaton Thompson, and Lavelle Davis Jr., and running back Paris Jones all did not play in the game. But still, Brennan Armstrong was really bad, and I tell you, I feel bad for the guy. I mean, he had such a good 2021 season. He came back for this 2022 season when he didn't have to come back, and he has had a nightmare of a season. And I do think that a lot of that falls on Virginia's first-year head coach, Tony Elliott, who has not done a good enough job of tailoring the offense to Brennan Armstrong's strengths. I do think a good bit of Armstrong's bad season has to do with his teammates, who have not been very good. I mean, the amount of drops by UVA this season has been maddening. But what's also true is that Armstrong hasn't played well. Brennan Armstrong for the 2021 season was 23rd among all qualified quarterbacks in the FBS in ESPN's total QBR. Armstrong for this season through week 11 is 100th among all qualified quarterbacks in the FBS in ESPN's total QBR. UVA finished this game against Pitt with just 144 total net yards of offense, averaged just 2.53 yards per play. You know, it's hard to truly judge the Wahoos defense in this game, given that the Hoos offense did so little, but the defense did have issues. The Hoos did lose the time of possession battle by 12 minutes, 4 seconds, so the defense was on the field a bunch, but the Hoos allowed Pitt running back Israel Abanikanda and his return from a one-game absence caused by injury to have 24 carries for 121 yards and a touchdown. The Hoos did hold Pitt quarterback Keaton Slovis to just 14-24 passing, but they let him throw for 208 yards, a touchdown, and no interceptions, and generated no sacks. Slovis averaged 8.67 yards per pass attempt. The Hoos did hold Pitt to just 6-15 on third downs. An ugly game in an ugly season for Wahoo. And we, during the post-game press conference at Tony Elliott on Saturday afternoon, had the following exchange involving a man who I have had on this podcast, a Virginia football and basketball insider, Mike Barber of Richmond.com.
Coach, obviously all you can do is kind of go back to work on this thing, but in the big picture, are you concerned with the damage that's kind of happening in terms of recruiting, attendance, that things because of this season?
I don't. I'm not worried. I mean... I came here with a vision in mind, a goal in mind, and you know what? It may not be going exactly how I planned it to be, but I'm not going to lose hope. I'm not going to lose focus. I'm not going to tuck my tail. And you bat me in a corner, then I'm going to turn, and I'm going to turn and fight. That's all I've ever done my entire life, and going to be accountable for the things that I got to change. And, you know, the attendance, that's on me. You know, the fans are expecting to see a good product on the field, and, you know, we've been inconsistent in what we're putting on the field, so I don't blame the fans. You know, that's on me. It's my job to make sure that we have a winning product for those individuals to come and attend. And from a recruiting standpoint, hey, all I can do is sell what my vision is. And there's going to be some guys that believe in what we're trying to build here, and those are going to be the guys that we want here at the University of Virginia. So I'm not going to change my message in recruiting. I'm not going to change my message to the team. We're going to go back to work on Monday, and what we're going to work on is making sure that the core values that we talk about in this program become values and not just words. Because for me, they're values, and I'm going to stand on those values. I'm going to fight for those values regardless of what the circumstances are.
Yeah, it's not good when a first-year head coach is already being asked about the damage that's being inflicted to recruiting and attendance by how bad his team is. And next up for Virginia, home to Coastal Carolina this Saturday afternoon at 3:30. Coastal Carolina, in case you do not know, is having a good season. Coastal Carolina is 9-1 overall and is number 23 in the latest Associated Press Top 25 poll, which came out on Sunday afternoon. And so the only FBS team in the state of Virginia that won on Saturday was James Madison. And what a win for the Dukes. They improved to 6-3 overall and 4-2 in the Sun Belt Conference with a 37-3 win at Old Dominion, which fell to 3-7 overall and 2-4 in the Sun Belt Conference. JMU snapped a 3-game losing streak. ODU now has lost 4 consecutive games. This game was total domination by James Madison, especially its defense, which allowed just 3 points and totaled 4 sacks and 3 interceptions, including a pick 6. JMU quarterback Todd Senteo didn't have any touchdown passes and did throw an interception, but he completed 18 of his 21 pass attempts for 304 yards. That works out to a whopping 14.48 yards per pass attempt. And he had a rushing touchdown. Next up for James Madison, home to Georgia State this Saturday afternoon at 2. And next up for Old Dominion at Appalachian State this Saturday afternoon at 2:30. And let's talk some college hoops before we call it a show. Blowout wins for Virginia Tech, Georgetown, and Virginia over the weekend. The Hokies played on Sunday evening. They improved to 3-0 with a 94-77 rout of William and Mary at Castle Coliseum in Blacksburg, Virginia. Tech went 16-32 on threes. Hunter Couture, 6-10 on threes. Sean Padula, 4-7 on threes. Each guy finished with 22 points. Next up for the Hokies, a game against Old Dominion in Charleston, South Carolina on Thursday afternoon at 2. Georgetown improved to 2-0 with a 92-58 blasting of Green Bay at Capital One Arena on Saturday in a game that started at 11 a.m. You know, the Hoyas actually led by just 2 points at the half, 31-29, but the Hoyas then won the second half, 61-29. The Hoyas in the second half went 5 of 8 on threes and 21 of 29 on twos. Also went just 4-9 on free throws. So the Hoyas in the second half were more efficient on threes and twos than the team was on free throws. Good game for the LSU transfer, Brandon Murray, 32 minutes as a starter, 3 of 4 on threes, 4 of 8 on twos. He finished with 19 points, 7 assists versus 1 turnover and 4 rebounds. Duquesne transfer, Primo Spears, 36 minutes as a starter, 0 of 2 on threes, but 9 of 11 on twos. He finished with 21 points, 5 assists versus 3 turnovers and 3 rebounds. And a very efficient game for Maryland transfer Kudus Wahab, who had transferred from Georgetown to Maryland. Kudus, in just 22 minutes as a starter, 8 of 12 on twos. He finished with 18 points and 7 rebounds, including 4 offensive boards. Next up for Georgetown, home to Northwestern Tuesday evening at 6:30 in the Gavitt tip-off games. And also over the weekend was number 18 Virginia improving to 2-0 with an 89-42 destruction of Monmouth at John Paul Jones Arena in Charlottesville, Virginia on Friday night. Some of the stats from this game are crazy. The Cavaliers finished with 35 points off turnovers to Monmouth's 2, as the Cavs committed a mere 6 turnovers to Monmouth's 21. The Cavs went 13 of 25 on threes. The Cavs won by 47 points despite not a single Cavs starter finishing with more than 9 points. Head coach Tony Bennett gave his reserves a lot of playing time. Cavs reserves ended up outscoring Monmouth reserves 48-12. Next up for Virginia, home to Northern Iowa, Monday night at 8. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You can tweet me at Al Galdi. You can email me, thealgaldipodcast@yahoo.com. Tuesday show, episode 443, will feature in-depth reaction to and analysis of whatever happens with the 4-5 Commanders in their game at the 8-0 and NFL-leading Philadelphia Eagles on Monday Night Football at 8:15. I plan on being up all night on Monday night going through the game and putting together the show so that the Tuesday installment of the pod will be out early Tuesday morning. Doing that will be a lot more fun if the Commanders win. So we hope for a win, but we, of course, shall see. I also, on Tuesday's show, we'll hit on some college basketball. Number 18, Virginia, home to Northern Iowa, Monday night at 8. Have a great rest of your Monday, and I'll talk to you on Tuesday.
It means you're close.